The Texans pushed through the bat wings and entered a saloon much like scores of others they had visited during their long years of wandering the frontier. A long bar of polished hardwood ran down the right-hand wall of the place. Behind it were shelves filled with liquor bottles, and above the bottles, displayed prominently, was a long, somewhat amateurishly executed painting of a nude woman whose endowments went beyond generous. She wore a coy smile on her face as she artfully concealed the most vital areas of her anatomy with her arms. The rest of the room included a dozen or so tables where the customers could sit and drink, a couple of felt-covered tables for poker and other card games, a faro layout, and a roulette wheel. Stairs on the left led up to a balcony and several rooms where the girls who worked here delivering drinks could ply the other part of their trade, and below the balcony was a tiny raised stage with a piano on it and an open area where folks could dance if they were of a mind to. Pot-bellied stoves stood in three corners of the room, but at this time of year, no fires burned in their bellies. In fact, the air in the big room was already hot and still, and laden with tobacco smoke and a mixture of unwholesome smells.
Oh, always feels like coming home again when you walk into a place like this.
You're home, maybe, not mine.
You ain't fooling me, Bo Creel. You miss the nightlife just as much as I do when we've been out on the trail for a while.
Bo didn't argue the point. He was busy looking for Dave Sutherland and the two bullies, Angus and Cully. He spotted them sitting at one of the tables. Angus's face was dotted with red puffy places where cactus needles had stuck him. Cully wore a dull frown, probably not that much different from his usual expression. Both of them glared at Bo and Scratch. Dave just glanced at the drifters, then tossed off the drink he had in front of him. None of the three at the table seemed to be in any mood to resume hostilities. They just passed around a bottle and refilled their glasses. Bo and Scratch angled toward the bar. They didn't much like turning their backs to the trio they'd clashed with earlier, but they were relying on their battle-honed instincts to warn them if any trouble cropped up. It would have been handy if there'd been a mirror above the back bar instead of that painting of a naked woman, but you couldn't have everything.
Couple of beers.
Scratch dropped a coin on the bar to pay for the drinks. He and Bo were running a mite low on funds, and since they wouldn't be drawing any wages from Abigail Sutherland, at least not right away, they would have to be careful with their drinking money and make it last as long as possible. The bartender drew the beers, filling a couple of mugs and placing them in front of Bo and Scratch. The coin disappeared into a cash box.
You gents are new in town, ain't you?
That's right.
We're gonna be working for Ms. Sutherland over at the stage line.
Is that so? I heard that the stage got held up between here and Chino Valley again. Say, are you boys the fellas who came along and ran off Rance Judson and his gang?
That's right. Those owl hoots took off with their tails betwixt their legs when they saw us coming with all guns blazing.
It wasn't quite that dramatic.
Yes, sir. The air was plumb filled with bullets for a while. We didn't even get a nick. When them bandits saw what they's up against, they thought better of trying to stop that stage.
I hear that old Ponderosa Pine got himself shot during the robbery. Is that old Pelican gonna live?
He's just got a flesh wound in his shoulder. He'll be all right.
Yeah, but he won't be able to work. There's no shotgun guard for a while. That's why Miss Sutherland asked us to give her a hand. We said yes, of course. We got us a downright hate for owl hoots, don't we, Bo? That's why we're gonna clean up that Judson hombre and his gang.
Bo just sipped his beer and didn't say anything. The boisterous discussion was drawing some attention from the other men in the room. Several of them turned to listen to Scratch talk. Bo glanced over his shoulder and saw that Dave, Angus, and Cully were still seated at the table. They were watching the scene at the bar too, but not making any move to get up. One of the drinkers took a step away from the bar and then sidled along it toward Bo and Scratch. He wore a dark red shirt, a black vest, and a black hat pushed back on his head. A grin was on what appeared to be a freshly shaven face. The faint smell of bay rum confirmed that he had come from the barbershop not long before.
Say, you fellas are from Texas, ain't you?
That's right. You recognize the accent, friend, or maybe you hail from the great Lone Star State, too?
Oh, hell no. If I was from that shithole, I wouldn't go around bragging about it. I just know that Texas turns out more old windbags than anything else. Even long-horned cattle.
I'm sorry, mister. I must have misunderstood you.
No, I know Texans are dumb as rocks, but you understood me all right, you blowhard. You may dress fancy, but I know me a saddle tramp when I see one.
Take it easy, Langdon. Nobody wants any trouble in here.
Won't be any trouble. Not from these two. You see, as well as being dumb and smelling like cow shit, Texans are gutless, too.
Bo had already taken note of the tied-down holster on the stranger's hip and the fancy nickel-plated revolver that rode in it. This man was a gunslinger, or at least believed himself to be one. And it was certainly possible that he was fast and slick on the draw. Plenty of men on the frontier were. He wasn't alone, either. A couple of other men had also stepped out from the bar and were watching what was going on with keen interest. They had the hard-eyed look and low-slung guns of killers, too, just like their friend. The man called Langdon was grinning at Scratch.
Well, Saddle Tramp, you got anything to say for yourself?
You got no call to talk about Texas or Texans that way, mister. But I reckon you never been there, so I'm just gonna chalk it up to ignorance.
Oh, I've been there, all right. And I was about sick in my stomach the whole time just from the stink of the place. I tell you, it really made me want to puke, though. The ugly women. I never saw an uglier bunch of females in all my born days.
That does it.
Scratch's muscles tensed as he readied himself to draw. Bo was watching the other two men and saw them reaching for their guns before Scratch had even made a move. He knew exactly what they figured was going to happen. Langdon would get out of the way, and his two partners would fill Scratch full of lead. Then they would claim they'd just been protecting their friend from an unprovoked attack by a stranger in town. It was an old trick. Bo wasn't going to let it happen. He still had a mostly full mug of beer in his hand. He let fly with it, flinging the mug and all into the face of one of the gunmen as hard as he could. The man never saw it coming. The beer from the mug splashed over the other man and distracted him just long enough. The long black Parson's coat swirled out as Bo pivoted and slashed down with the gun against the skull of the second gunny. The man went down hard, just like his companion. Scratch's common sense and battle savvy won out over the fury caused by the insults Langdon had leveled at Texas and its women. At the same time as Bo was making his move against the other two men, Scratch's left hand moved with flashing speed, not toward the gun he wore on that side, but toward Langdon's gun hand. Scratch's fingers clamped around the man's wrist and kept him from drawing his gun. Scratch's right hand came up in a sizzling punch that crashed flush against Langdon's jaw and drove Langdon to the side against the bar. He got a good hold on Langdon's hair and bounced his face off the hardwood. The gunman's knees unhinged. He landed in the sawdust about the same time as his two partners. Scratch looked across the bar and saw the bartender gaping at him and Bo.
Just because a couple of fellas are getting a mite along in a tooth don't mean they can't handle themselves in a ruckus anymore. That's worth remembering.
Yes, sir. I sure will.
Langdon and the man Bo had buffaloed with his gun were both out cold. The hombre who had caught the thrown beer mug in the face was still conscious, but not interested in fighting. His nose was leaking blood and not exactly the right shape anymore. Bo still had his gun drawn. He wasn't just watching the man with the broken nose. He had an eye on the rest of the men in the saloon as well, especially Dave, Angus, and Cully. Those three hadn't moved during the brief fight, which surprised Bo a little. He had thought that they might try to take advantage of the situation and attack him and Scratch again. The bat wings were slapped open, and a beefy, middle-aged man with gray hair and a mustache came into Sharky's carrying a shotgun. A tin star was pinned to his leather vest. His eyes spotted the gun in Bo's hand right away.
All right, mister. Just put that gun on the bar easy-like and step away from it.
Sure, Marshal. Since you're here, I reckon you'll make sure nobody else in this place tries to ventilate my partner and me.
Nobody's gonna ventilate anybody, unless it's me doing the ventilating. Now put that gun down.
Bo shrugged and placed the Colt on the bar. He moved away from it a little, but stayed within arm's reach. That seemed to be enough to mollify the marshal.
Claremont, what the hell's going on here? Somebody come running down to my office saying that a war was about to break out in here.
There was a disagreement between Langdon and this fella here in the buckskin jacket. I told both of them I didn't want any trouble in here, but they were bound and determined to start something.
Who are you? I don't think I've seen the two of you in Red Butte before.
That's because we just rode in earlier this afternoon. We've never been here before.
What are you doing here now?
We came in with a stagecoach. It was us who kept it from being robbed.
Yeah, I heard about that. You two are the fellas that had that shootout with Rance Judson's gang?
That's right. We're working for Mrs. Sutherland now, so I guess she can vouch for us.
The bat wings were shoved aside violently again, and the man who strode in, followed by several more gun-toting hombres, heard Bo's statement and thrust out an arm, pointing accusingly at Bo and Scratch.
I should have known when I heard that some of my men were in trouble down here. Those two are hard cases hired by that woman. And look what they've done to Langdon, Sims, and Bartlett. Marshal, I demand that you throw them in jail where their kind belong.
The man blustering just inside the saloon entrance was tall and broad-shouldered, with a ruggedly powerful face that showed he had spent a lot of time outdoors. He wore a brown tweed suit and a dark brown Stetson, and the butt of a gun carried in a cross-draw rig stuck out from under the suit coat on the left side. The four men with him were cut from the same cloth as Langdon and the other two, which led Bo to make a guess based on what Abigail Sutherland had told him earlier.
Take it easy, Mr. Rutledge. I'm looking into this.
Damn it, Harden! I don't want you looking into it! I want you to arrest those troublemakers! Abigail Sutherland probably put them up to attacking my men!
You better rein in your horse, mister. Miss Sutherland didn't have anything to do with this fracas. Fact of the matter is, it was your men who started it by insulting the great state of Texas and its ladies.
That's not the story the way Claremont told it. You sticking to what you said earlier?
That old-timer's telling you the truth, Marshal. Langdon started it, and Bartlett and Sims are ready to bushwhack him when the other old gent stopped him.
Everyone looked around to see that Dave Sutherland was on his feet at last, moving toward the bar from where Angus and Cully still sat. The young man's eyes were still a little bleary, but by and large, he seemed to be sober.
Old-timer, is it?
No offense, Dave, but of course you'd stick up for these two if they really were working for your ma.
That doesn't have anything to do with it, Marshal. You know me and my mother don't always get along. I wouldn't lie to the law just to help out a couple of strangers who hadn't even been working for her an hour yet.
Yeah, I reckon that makes sense.
Don't listen to him, Marshal. You've got Claremont's statement, and I'm sure when my men are in shape to talk to you, they'll tell you the same thing. Maybe they got a little proddy, I won't argue that with you. Men sometimes have to blow off some steam, but these two could have seriously injured him. My God, Bartlett's nose is broken. I'll swear out a complaint and you arrest those saddle tramps.
Don't go telling me what to do, Mr. Rutledge. I'm the marshal of this town and I know how to do my job.
Of course you do, Marshal. I didn't mean to suggest otherwise, but it's hard to stand by and watch that woman and her people deliberately cause trouble. Good Lord, I'm not convinced that there's not some sort of connection between the Sutherland stage line and those outlaws at Judson's.
I don't know, Mr. Rutledge. That sounds mighty far-fetched to me.
It's loco, that's what it is. Why, it's only been a few hours since Bo and me was trading shots with those owl-hoots while they tried to hold up one of Miss Sutherland's coaches.
We've only got your word for that, don't we?
What about that bullet hole in Ponderosa Pine's shoulder? I'd say that's proof.
Proof that the old fool got shot, that's all. It might have been an accident, or maybe one of you shot him just to make your story look good. For all we know, you're part of Judson's gang.
Mister, I'm getting mighty tired of that line of bull you're putting out.
Marshal, you can ask Gil Sutherland and Ponderosa about the robbery. They'll tell the same story we do.
Of course they will.
And there have been other times when Judson's gang held up Mrs. Sutherland's stagecoaches. I'm sure there were witnesses to those crimes.
Yeah, that's true. I talked to the passengers who were on the coaches that got stopped, and their stories pretty well matched up.
And I believe Mrs. Sutherland said that a driver and a guard who worked for her were killed during one of the holdups. I know I just met Miss Sutherland, but I don't think she'd have anything to do with murdering innocent men just to keep suspicion from falling on her.
Maybe those men were killed accidentally. Things could have gotten out of hand. Anyway, I never said I thought there is a connection between Mrs. Sutherland and Rance Judson, just that there could be.
You could be able to flap your arms and fly to the moon, too, mister, but I ain't gonna wait for it to happen.
I think we all need to just settle down. Mr. Rutledge, why don't you have a couple of your boys take Bartlett down to Doc Chambers' place and see if the doc can do anything for him? And the rest of them can haul Langdon and Sims back to their rooms and let them sleep it off.
They're not drunk. They were knocked out. Assaulted.
This wouldn't be the first time those three have got mixed up in a shooting and somebody else wound up dead. I don't like killings in my town, so I don't feel much like giving them the benefit of the doubt this time. No offense.
Judging from the glare on Rutledge's face, he did take offense, and plenty of it. But he didn't argue any more with the lawman. He just jerked a hand at his men.
Get him out of here!
Two of the hard cases helped Bartlett to his feet and assisted him out of the saloon. The others picked up the still unconscious forms of Langdon and Sims and carried them out.
If I was you, Marshal, I'd keep a close eye on these saddle tramps. If you do, you'll see that it's them who are the real troublemakers.
After Rutledge was gone, Marshal Harding shook his head.
That's a stiff-necked man. Lots of mad in him and not much backup. I'd keep an eye out behind me if I was you boys. Those three don't take kindly to anybody getting the best of them, especially Cal Langdon. When he wakes up, he's going to be touchy as an old grizzly.
Are you saying he might try to shoot us from a dark alley or something like that, Marshal?
Well, no, I don't think he would. I'm just saying you ought to be careful, that's all.
If we wasn't careful, we wouldn't have lived as long as we have.
That's for sure.
Claremont, when I ask you a question, I expect a straight answer, savvy?
I told you the way I saw it, Marshal. I'm working here. It's a busy night. Can't expect a man to see every little thing that goes on.
Now, I'm a little surprised you'd stick up for these two, Dave. I heard you and Angus and Cully had a run-in with them yourselves a while ago.
That was mostly Angus and Cully, Marshal. And we'd all had too much to drink.
Well, that don't surprise me none. Try to keep your nose clean, kid. Keeping a peace around here is hard enough without you three young hellions going around stirring things up.
You done with me, Marshal?
Yeah, go back to your friends. You two, come with me.
Are you arresting us, Marshal?
No, I'm not arresting you. I just want to talk to you, but not here.
That's all right with me. Ain't the friendliest place I ever been anyway.
The two drifters followed the Marshal outside. The sun had set, and night was setting down over Red Butte now. Stars had begun to flicker into life in the deep blue sky that arched above the settlement and the butte that gave it its name. Harding and the two Texans began strolling down the street.
You say you're working for Abigail Sutherland?
That's right. We signed on as drivers, guards, or whatever else she needs us to be.
Hired guns?
We're not gunslingers, Marshal. That don't mean we can't handle these guns when we need to, but we don't hire out to go gunning for folks.
I'm glad to hear it. Rutledge claims these hombres who work for him are just teamsters. But you saw them for yourselves. They haven't done a whole lot of honest work in their lives.
And you thought we were more of the same, hired by Mrs. Sutherland to take her side in this little war that's brewing between her and Rutledge.
I ain't sure how little it's gonna be. But if it breaks out, it's gonna be pretty one-sided, that's for sure. And Sutherland's got one boy who means well, but is green. One that's not worth much of anything, to be blunt about it. And a crippled-up old-timer.
And us.
Two more old-timers.
You boys may have some years on you, but based on how you handle those three gunslicks, I wouldn't want to tangle with you. What are your names, anyway? I may have heard them, but I disremember.
I'm Bo Creel. This is Scratch Morton.
Creel Morton. I don't recall seeing any wanted posters on either of you.
That's because there aren't any.
We're peaceable men.
Yeah, I could tell that when I came into the saloon and found you standing over a fellow with a busted nose and two more who were out colder than mackerel.
Well, that wasn't our fault.
I know that. But you strike me as the sort of gents who just naturally find trouble whether you want to be peaceable or not.
Rutledge was quick to hint that Mrs. Sutherland might be tied up with Judson's outlaws.
Foolishness.
What about the other way around?
I don't get your meaning.
What are the chances that there's some connection between Rutledge and Judson?
That don't make any sense either. Rutledge's freight wagons have been held up, and so is that one stagecoach he runs back and forth between here and Cottonwood every week.
Did he lose much of value?
Well, I don't know about that. And I can only go by what Rutledge tells me.
Exactly. Has anybody been hurt in any of those holdups?
Well, now that I come to think of it, I don't believe they have.
And maybe they were the same sort of phony robberies Rutledge accused Mrs. Sutherland of being a part of.
Sorry, Creel, but this is getting too mixed up for me. I think both sides need to quit flinging accusations back and forth and just learn to get along. I don't reckon that's gonna happen, though. The getting along part, I mean. As long as Jared Rutledge wants to have the only stage line in these parts and a government mail contract to boot, he's a fellow who doesn't like it when he don't get what he wants.
He'll just have to learn to live with it.
Or die with it, if it comes to that.
Well, here's my office. See you boys later. Just be careful and try to stay out of trouble.
We always do.
Yeah, it's everybody else who don't cooperate.
The Texans continued walking along the street toward the headquarters of the Sutherland Stagecoach Line. As they drew near the adobe building that housed the office and the Sutherland family's living quarters, Ponderosa Pine came out onto the front porch and spotted them.
There you fellas are. Come on in. Grub's on the table. Feeding you's part of your wages, remember?
Best part it smells like.
Ponderosa led them through the office and into the dining room that was part of the living quarters in the rear of the building. Like the office, it was comfortably furnished. A thick-legged table big enough for a dozen people dominated the room. Heavy chairs were arranged around it. No one was sitting at the table, though.
Yeah, back when Will Sutherland was still alive, this place was always full at mealtimes. There was the four of them, plus enough drivers and guards and hostlers to fill up the rest of the chairs. Now, with Will dead and Dave gone off who knows where, doing who knows what, and everybody else up and quit on us, it sure ain't like it used to be.
Well, maybe we can help out a little in that respect, too.
And Dave is down at Sharky's. At least he was a few minutes ago.
Now, that don't surprise me one blasted bit. Sitting down there getting drunk with those two shiftless friends of his, I reckon.
Well, they were together, all right. Dave didn't seem to be drunk, though. In fact, he stood up for us with the marshal when there was some trouble.
Trouble? Tell me about it quick, before Miss Abigail comes back from the kitchen.
Bo and Scratch complied with that request, summarizing in a few short sentences the run-in they'd had with Jared Rutledge's men, then telling the old-timer about how Rutledge himself had shown up at Sharky's after the fight.
Yeah, that's just like Rutledge. Shows up after the dirty work's over and done with. That fella Langdon's one of his top gunnies, and Sims and Barlett are the other two. They must have been listening to you talking, and when they heard that you were working for Miss Abigail, they knew their boss would want them to run you off.
Well, they had more in mind than running us off. They would have killed us if we'd given them the chance.
Well, there ain't a better way to make sure a fella don't interfere with your plans than to put him in the ground now, is there?
Bo and Scratch couldn't argue with that. Before they could discuss anything else with Ponderosa, Abigail Sutherland came into the room through a swinging door. The platter of roast beef she carried was evidence that the kitchen was on the other side of that door. Steam rose from the meat, along with an appealing aroma.
I'm glad to see you, gentlemen. I thought I might have to send Ponderosa to look for you. Where are the boys?
Gil's out in the barn tending to the horses. As for Dave,
Well, here, let me take that, ma'am. I'd be happy to give you a hand.
I'd rather you'd tell me where my younger son is, Mr. Morton, since judging from Ponderosa's reaction, you might know something about that.
Yeah, well,
he was at Sharky's Saloon a little while ago. I don't know if he still is or not.
I'd say it's very likely he is.
Abigail let Scratch take the platter of roast beef now.
Just put it in the center of the table, Mr. Morton. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll go fetch Gil.
There's no point in waiting for Dave. We'll go ahead and eat.
Scratch was right beside Abigail as she started into the kitchen again.
Yeah, I'll help you with the rest of the food.
Thank you, Mr. Morton.
Now you should call me Scratch.
Everyone was rather subdued during supper, except for Scratch. Plenty of good food and the company of an attractive woman made him ebullient, no matter what the rest of the circumstances might be. And the food was good, no denying that. The roast beef was tender and savory. The potatoes that went with it were cooked just right, and the greens made a nice addition to the meal. The apple pie that finished off the meal was some of the best the Texans had ever had, as Scratch pointed out with his usual considerable enthusiasm. But still, the shadow of two missing family members seemed to hang over the table. Will Sutherland, the patriarch who was dead and gone, and Dave, the younger son who was estranged from the rest of the family. That didn't even take into account the attempted holdup that afternoon and the injury to Ponderosa that had resulted from it, or the two violent clashes Bo and Scratchit had with other hombres just since arriving in Red Butte. Of course, Abigail didn't know about the trouble with Rutledge's men yet, but she was bound to hear about it sooner or later. That turned out to be sooner, as the pounding of a fist on the office door sounded while Bo and Scratch were clearing the table after supper was over. Scratch had been quick to volunteer for the task, and he had volunteered Bo at the same time.
Who in the world can that be?
Can't be anybody looking to buy a ticket, since we don't ever have any passengers anymore.
You're exaggerating, boy. Just because the coach was empty on today's run don't mean we won't never have no more passengers.
The three of them went into the office while Bo and Scratch were carrying the dirty dishes into the kitchen.
Jared Rutledge, you have your nerve. How dare you suggest
that... Now, Abigail, you just calm down.
As Bo and Scratch came back into the dining room a moment later, they heard angry voices from the front of the building. They exchanged a look, then hitched their gun belts up and ambled into the office. Jared Rutledge stood just inside the open front door, his face flushed with anger.
There they are now. I knew Marshal Harding wouldn't arrest him, even though it was clearly his duty to do so.
You've been talking about us, have you, Rutledge?
I thought Mrs. Sutherland ought to know what kind of men she's hired. A couple of violent saddle tramps who are on the prod.
Mr. Rutledge claims that you picked a fight with some of his men in Sharky Saloon. Is that true?
Not hardly.
Rutledge's men started the fight. He knows it. There were plenty of witnesses. Some of them were too scared to speak up, and the bartender sort of shaded the truth of mine when the marshal asked him about it. But everybody who was there knows what really happened, including your son Dave, ma'am.
All right. I believe you.
That doesn't change the fact that I have a man with a broken nose and a couple who are lucky their heads aren't busted. According to Dr. Chambers, all three of them will be laid up for a few days. That's liable to leave me short-handed.
What would you have me do about that, Mr. Rutledge? Loan you the services of Mr. Morton and Mr. Creel?
Now hold on a minute. I ain't gonna work for
that. Don't worry, Mr. Morton. I wouldn't ask you to do that. What I would ask, Mr. Rutledge, is that you leave. Your men provoked the trouble, and I don't owe you any explanations or apologies.
You'll regret hiring those two, Mrs. Sutherland. Mark my words, you'll regret it.
Rutledge left the Stage Line headquarters as abruptly and as angrily as he had left Sharky's earlier. Abigail watched him go and shook her head.
What did he hope to accomplish by coming down here and trying to browbeat me?
I don't reckon he was trying to accomplish anything except to keep on being an arrogant jackass, just like always. Pardon my French, man.
Yeah, a fella like that's just in love with the sound of his own voice. Just likes to carry on for the sake of carrying on.
You're probably right. And, but please don't take this the wrong way, gentlemen. I know that tonight you were just defending yourselves, and that's exactly what I want you to do. But in the future, if such situations can be avoided...
We'll do our best to avoid them, ma'am.
It's just that a lot of people in Red Butte see Mr. Rutledge's freight company as being more important to the survival of the town than our stagecoach line. And I suppose it is. His wagons bring in most of the goods that are sold in the stores. Red Butte could get by without our stagecoaches easier than it could without Mr. Rutledge. So naturally, people tend to support him.
What about the mail? Folks wouldn't like it if they couldn't get their mail no more.
But they would get their mail, and they know it. If the Stage Line goes under, Mr. Rutledge will take over the mail contract, too.
That's not gonna happen. Rutledge has run roughshod over everybody else around here for too long. It's time he was taken down a notch or two.
We want to avoid trouble, if at all possible, Gil. Not go looking for it. I don't know what you have in mind.
Oh, nothing. I'm not going to do anything. I was just talking.
Good. I don't care nearly as much about the Stage Line as I do for my family. I couldn't stand to lose you or Dave.
You've already lost Dave. You lost him when Pa died.
Gil, you shouldn't say such things. Your brother will straighten himself out.
I'm going back out to the barn. One of the horses has a problem with a shoe.
Yeah, I'll come with you, boy.
Bo and Scratch excused themselves and drifted out onto the front porch, where they sat down in the rocking chairs. Scratch took out the Makins and began to roll a Quirly. Bo slipped his pipe and tobacco pouch from a pocket and started packing the bowl of the old briar. The night was warm and quiet. A wagon wheel squeaked somewhere, and hooves plodded in the dusty street. From inside the building, a faint clinking could be heard as Abigail washed the dishes from supper.
Now, we should have done that for her.
She probably wouldn't have let us. Most women don't like anybody else messing around in their kitchen.
Well, they don't want another woman in there. They don't mind near as much when a man rolls up his sleeves and gets soap suds on his arms. That's your trouble, Bo. You don't understand women.
And you do.
You damn right I do. Better than you do, anyway. Come on. When was the last time that you...
Well, there's more to it than that, you know.
Yeah. But without that, the rest of it don't add up to near as much.
Think what you want, old-timer.
I generally do. You think she's right? You think there's any chance that boy Dave will ever straighten up and behave?
I don't know. I've been acquainted with some pretty disreputable characters who finally grew up, sort of.
I ain't got the foggiest notion who you're talking about.
I can't seem to find a match. Reckon I could light my pipe off of that one of yours?
Sure.
Scratch held out the burning match, and Bo leaned over to take it from him. That was when the whip crack of a rifle split the peaceful night. Bo felt as much as heard the slug as it sizzled through the air next to his ear before smacking into the back of the rocking chair. Splinters stung the back of his neck. Instinct and reflexes took over. Bo dropped the pipe and flung himself forward, diving out of the chair. Scratch hit the floor of the porch at the same time Bo did, having reacted to the shot the same way. His left hand came down on the still burning match, which he had dropped as he left the rocking chair, and smothered the flame. The Texans put some distance between themselves. They had both filled their hands already. Bo had seen the gout of orange flame from the rifle muzzle when the first shot rang out. It came from a clump of scrubby trees across the road. The stage station was on the edge of town, so there were vacant lots between most of the buildings around here. Bo returned the fire from the Colt in his hand. A few yards away, past the steps, both of Scratch's pearl-handled Remingtons began blazing too. The drifters sent 7 or 8 shots into the trees.
What's going on out here?
Get back inside, ma'am!
And keep your head down!
Bo and Scratch had enough to worry about without the possibility of Abigail getting hit by a stray bullet. That bushwhacker across the road could open fire again at any moment. Or he might be lying dead over there with Texan lead in him. He could have fled, too, taking off for the tall and uncut. There was also the chance that he was just biding his time, waiting for Bo or Scratch to show themselves. Neither of the drifters budged, sticking to the thick shadows on the porch. Bo heard swift footsteps hurrying from the rear of the place, along the wall of the building.
Gil! Ponderosa! Stay back, man!
You all right, Mr. Creel?
Yeah! You hit Scratch?
Nope. You reckon that varmint's still over there, Bo?
No telling.
Why don't I just circle around and try to find out?
All right, but don't dawdle along the way.
I don't intend to.
Bo heard the faint sounds of movement as Scratch rolled off the far end of the porch. He caught a glimpse of his trail partner darting behind a wagon that was parked farther down the street. Scratch's actions didn't draw any fire. Bo had his Colt leveled and ready in case more muzzle flame spurted from the darkness among the trees. Scratch worked his way along the street for several more yards, utilizing every bit of cover he could find, then finally sprinted across the open ground when he thought he had gone far enough. When he reached the other side of the street, he dropped into a crouch in front of a saddle maker shop that was closed for the night and began moving back toward the vacant lot where the bushwhacker had lurked and might still be lurking for all Scratch knew. On the porch of the stage line building, Bo heard Abigail Sutherland at the window.
What's happening now?
Scratch is circling around to get closer to whoever fired those shots.
Oh, I hope he's being careful.
Scratch does have a pretty reckless nature sometimes, but not when it comes to gunfights. You'll be all right. You might want to blow out the lamps in there, ma'am, if you haven't already.
I thought of that and took care of it already, Mr. Creel.
Good job, ma'am.
Bo saw motion down the street from the corner of his eye and turned his head to take a better look. A figure was trotting along toward the stage line headquarters, and as the man came closer, Bo recognized him as Marshal Tom Harding. All the shooting had drawn the attention of the law.
Marshal, stay back!
Harding ducked behind the wagon where Scratch had taken cover a few moments earlier.
Grill, is that you?
Yeah.
What in blazes is going on now?
Somebody over in those trees started taking pot shots at Scratch and me.
Anybody hurt?
Not on our side. Don't know yet about the bushwhacker. Scratch is going to take a look.
All clear. Whoever the varmint was, he's gone.
Bo pushed himself to his feet. Keeping the gun in his hand, he stepped down from the porch and met Marshal Harding in front of the building. Gil and Ponderosa came around from the side, and Abigail opened the door and stepped out onto the porch. Bo half turned and motioned her back in with his free hand.
Maybe you better stay inside, ma'am. Just because the bushwhacker's not where he was a few minutes ago, doesn't mean he's not still around.
Well, I suppose so. Gil, Ponderosa, be careful.
Well, let's go take a look over there. Might find something to tell us who he was.
The four men trooped across the street to join Scratch, who emerged from the shadows under the trees, nodding toward the rear of the little grove.
I got back yonder, then worked my way to the street. There's nobody here anymore.
Gil, you reckon you could fetch a lantern?
Sure, Marshal. I'll be right back.
Gil returned a few minutes later with a lit lantern, which Harding took and held up so that the yellow glow from it washed over the ground under the trees. Some other townspeople had come up by now, and the marshal addressed them.
You folks stay back until I've had a look around. If there's any sign up in here, I don't want it messed up.
It didn't take long to determine, though, that the bushwhacker hadn't left any clues to his identity. There were boot prints on the sandy ground underneath the trees, but evidently this vacant lot sometimes served as a shortcut for the citizens of Red Butte, because there were too many prints to be able to pick out any one particular set as belonging to the riflemen. Bo found several empty rifle cartridges, too, when the brass reflected the lantern light, but that didn't tell them anything except that the weapon used .44-40 ammunition. There were probably dozens of such rifles in the settlement. Marshal Harding glared at Bo and Scratch.
What is it about you fellas? You've only been in town a few hours, and already you've been mixed up in two separate brawls and a shooting.
None of which we started.
And don't forget that attempted stage holdup.
I'm not forgetting anything. Is this sort of ruction what we've got to look forward to as long as you're in Red Butte?
It's not our fault somebody started shooting at us.
And we weren't just going to sit there and let them do it without shooting back.
No, I don't reckon anybody could blame you for doing that. Still, it'd be just fine with me if the two of you decided to ride on in the morning instead of going to work for Miss Sutherland.
That's not going to happen. We gave the lady our word.
All right. I'm going to stop and have a talk with Clayton Addison on my way back to the office, though.
Who's that?
The local undertaker. I want to tell him he's liable to be a mite busier than usual for a while, as long as you boys are in town.
Oh, now that ain't fair. We ain't killed nobody in this town.
Yet.
Harding just shook his head and walked away.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, it looks like things are gonna be popping while you fellas are around. Life will be more entertaining anyway.
Entertaining? Or just more dangerous?
Come on, we best go tell Miss Sutherland that everybody's all right and there's nothing to worry about.
Bo wasn't sure that was the case. From what he'd seen of the situation in Red Butte, there was plenty to worry about. The formation that had given the settlement its name rose some 100 feet from the mostly flat ground surrounding it. To anyone approaching it at night on horseback, it loomed high enough to blot out some of the stars, and its dark bulk was menacing. The shadows at its base were so thick that not even the keenest eyesight could penetrate them. That was why the rider heading for Red Butte tonight reined to a halt just before he reached those Stygian shadows. The outlaw known as Rance Judson gave a low whistle, and a few moments later, in response to the signal, he heard hoofbeats nearby. Another rider emerged from the shrouding darkness. The rider who had come from the settlement angrily told Judson about how the attempt on the drifters' lives had failed. When Judson objected to the man's tone, he was reassured of the big payoff that was coming soon. Satisfied, Judson promised the man from town that the next time he or his men confronted Creel and Morton, they'd be dead men. Having concluded their business, the two men wheeled their horses and rode away, heading in different directions, the outlaw leader circling the butte and riding north for the Badlands, his partner trotting back toward the lights of the settlement where he made his home. The rest of the night passed quietly, for which Bo and Scratch were grateful. They made themselves comfortable in the barn. The accommodations weren't fancy, of course, but they had slept in lots worse places in their lives. The next morning, everyone gathered in the dining room for breakfast. Even Dave Sutherland was there, although from the bleary look in his eyes and the way he winced at the slightest noise, he was plenty hungover. He didn't have much to say. Instead, he wore a surly frown and concentrated on his food.
When's your next run over to Chino Valley and Cottonwood scheduled?
Day after tomorrow. The driver and guard spend the night in Cottonwood, then make the return trip the next day with the mail pouch and any passengers that need a ride.
Not many of those lately.
Business ought to pick up once word gets around that you got Bo and me riding shotgun.
Why? You two aren't famous gunfighters or anything like that.
And we don't want to be. I reckon we can handle those outlaws, though. Ms. Sutherland, Scratch and I can take the next run and give Gil a break. What would you like for us to do in the meantime?
I wouldn't feel right about asking you to do anything. After all, I'm not paying you, remember?
You're feeding us. Doing a mighty good job of it, too. I don't think I've ever had any flapjacks better than these.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Scratch.
We don't mind doing whatever we need to in order to help out.
Well, I got a heap of harness that needs some mending. Been putting it off for a while. Now with just one arm, I reckon I'd have some trouble doing it.
And if you're sure you don't mind, I could use a hand with some repairs here in the house.
I'll take care of it. Whatever you need. Old Bo there is a good hand at mending harness. Ain't that right, Bo?
I suppose. I've done plenty of it in my life, that's for sure.
What are your plans for today, Dave?
I'm sure he plans to do what he always does. Hang around one of the saloons and get drunk with those worthless friends of his.
There's no call for talk like that, Gil.
Why not? It's the truth. Dave doesn't contribute anything around here. Y'all just throw him out.
There won't be any talk about throwing anybody out. And you're not helping the situation, you know.
At least I pull my share of the weight around here. And his, too.
I'm not going to sit here and listen to this.
No, you're going to run off like you always
Gil,
do.
Stop it! Gentlemen, I'm sorry about this.
No need to apologize, ma'am.
Yeah, it ain't like we never saw a little family squabble before.
Better check the petty cash, Ma. Probably helped himself to some whiskey money as he was leaving.
You just have to make things worse, don't you?
How can they get any worse than they already are? The stage line's barely afloat. Ponderosa's got a bullet hole in his shoulder, and we've been reduced to hiring saddle tramps for help. Maybe you ought to just go ahead and give up and sell out to Rutledge. Probably doesn't want to buy the line anymore, though. Why should he when all he has to do is wait for it to collapse on its own?
Abigail leaped to her feet and hurried out to the kitchen, letting the door swing back and forth behind her. Gil didn't say anything else. After a moment, he gave a dour shake of his head, got up, and went out into the office without looking at Bo, Scratch, or Ponderosa.
Do they go at it like that very often?
Yeah, all the time, especially whenever Dave's around. That boy just plumb provokes his brother, just by being here.
It looks like he'd be glad to have Dave around. You'd think he'd want the boy to take some of the load off of him.
Yeah, but that ain't never the way it works out. Them two can't get along. Anytime they try to work together, sooner or later there's a ruckus.
Yeah, well, sometimes brothers are like that. Well, maybe Miss Abigail's calmed down a mite by now, and she could tell me just what chores she needs doing around here.
Yeah, I'll show you where that harness is, Bo. Come on out to the barn with me.
It was an uneventful morning for the Texans. Scratch had hoped to spend most of it with Abigail, but he was disappointed. She had him repairing some shelves in the kitchen while she spent the morning in the office going over the stage line's books. Bo did his work in the tack room inside the barn, mending harness for the teams, while Ponderosa perched on a three-legged stool and kept him company. The old-timer talked at length about his days working for the Butterfield Stage Company with Will Sutherland, and also about how they had come here to Red Butte together to start the new stage line.
Yeah, Will wanted to make me a partner in the line, but I turned him down flat. And for one thing, I didn't have no money to put into it. Money never has had a habit of staying in my pockets for too long. Will offered to make me a partner anyway, you know, let me pay him back out of my share of the profits, but I wouldn't hear of it. Now, I don't want to be beholden to anybody, and I sure don't want the headaches of actually being responsible for anything. But I expect you and Scratch can understand that, being the fiddle-footed galoots that you are.
We haven't let much grass grow under our feet these past 30 or 40 years.
Bo didn't mention that once he'd had a fine little ranch between Victoria and Hallettsville, with plenty of good grass growing underneath his feet. He'd had a wife and children, too, until the fever took them, and then the ranch didn't mean anything without them. If not for his friend Scratch, he wouldn't have made it through that tragic time. So it made sense that they'd ridden together ever since.
I told Will I'd be glad to work for him, though. Things went pretty well at first, till some of the mines started to peter out, and those other settlements folks talked about starting around Chino Valley and Cottonwood never came to anything. Then Jarrett Rutledge got uppity and on the prod because he wanted to be the big skookum he-wolf in these parts and own the stage line. Will turned him down flat.
Yeah, I've been wondering about something Gil said along those lines. Did Rutledge offer to buy the line again after Will Sutherland died?
Yep, he sure did. Showed up too soon to even be decent about it, if you ask me. Poor Will was barely cold in the ground before Rutledge was pestering Miss Abigail to sell out to him. Yeah, she tried to be nice about it at first. She can't hardly be no other way, you know. But Rutledge, he wouldn't take the hint. She finally told him that she would never sell the stage line, that it'd be disloyal to her husband's memory if she did, since Will worked so hard to start it up. Now, Rutledge is the sort of fella who don't like it when somebody tells him no. He don't like it even a little bit.
And it was after that Rance Judson and his outlaw gang showed up.
Yeah. About a month later, they pulled their first job, if I recollect right. First job around here, I should say. They'd pulled some holdups over in New Mexico territory and up in southern Colorado, around Pueblo. That's how come folks in these parts were able to figure out who they were. Judson's an ugly-looking fella, and his face is on plenty of wanted posters. The gang wears masks most of the time, but a few of the people got a look at Judson's face and recognized him.
Yeah, there's a certain type of owl hoot who wants his victims to know who he is. Frank and Jesse James and the younger brothers never went to any great pains to keep their identity secret.
That's just what I'm saying. Judson's proud of being a no-good desperado, and he don't care who knows it.
What do you know about Jared Rutledge?
What do you mean, what I know about him? I know enough not to like the high-handed polecat.
He was already here in Red Butte when the Sutherlands moved here and started the stage line, right?
Yeah. He hadn't been here for too long, though. He'd been running his freight wagons for a month or two.
And you don't know where he came from for that?
Got no earthly idea. Say, what are you getting at, Bo?
Mrs. Sutherland said she thought there might be a connection between Rutledge and Rance Judson. I'm wondering if they knew each other before Rutledge moved here.
You mean maybe Rutledge was an outlaw? A member of Judson's gang? Doggone it, you might have something there. Now, how'd you go about finding out something like that?
I don't know. There's no telegraph line here, so I can't wire the authorities in New Mexico Territory and Colorado to ask them about Judson's gang. I suppose I could write some letters and mail them. I know a few lawmen over there who might be willing to do me a favor.
Yeah, writing letters and getting answers would take a while, but that might be the only way to go about it, all right. You could send the letters in the pouch on the next eastbound stage.
And guard them myself.
Yeah, you could see too if they got turned over to the postmaster at Cottonwood. Sounds like something that'd be worth doing.
I'll write the letters tonight.
You're the sort of fella that likes to get to the bottom of things, ain't you?
Now, Scratch says that I can't abide a mystery. I reckon there's some truth to that.
I got a feeling Jared Rutledge is gonna be sorry you ever came to Red Butte.
Mm-hmm. Bo was finished mending harness by the middle of the afternoon, and since Scratch was still busy in the house, working on a recalcitrant butter churn now, Bo strolled down the street to Marshal Tom Harding's office. He found the lawman inside, cleaning one of the rifles from the rack on the wall. Bo walked in and perched his hip on a corner of the desk.
Howdy, Creel. I thought maybe you'd left town.
Why's that?
Hadn't been any general mayhem so far today.
Contrary to what you might think, Marshal, sometimes Scratch and I visit a town where nobody tries to kill us at all.
Now, what town would that be?
I was wondering what you could tell me about Rance Judson.
Judson? Why? Are you thinking about going after the bounty on his head?
I had more in mind keeping him from attacking any more Mrs. Sutherland's stagecoaches.
Harding replaced the rifle in the rack and turned to the desk and pawed through a welter of papers on it.
Good luck with that. Nobody's been able to corral that son of a buck yet. I'll do better than tell you about Judson. I'll show you what he looks like.
After a moment, Harding found the paper he was looking for and slapped it face up on the desk in front of Bo. It was a wanted poster, and staring up from it was a craggy visage with a large, somewhat misshapen nose and a thick black mustache.
That's Rance Judson. Picture's ugly enough for a mama to use it to scare her kids, ain't it?
He's not what you call handsome. This reward dodger's from New Mexico territory.
Yeah. He's wanted there and in Colorado for bank robbery, rustling, stagecoach holdups, and murder. Him and his boys have been busy.
And now Judson's wanted over here, too.
That's $500 on his head and $250 for any of his men. I expect the amounts will go up every time they pull a job and get away with it.
Ponderosa was telling me that Judson was identified by several people who saw him without his mask while he was carrying out crimes.
But Judson doesn't care about things like that. He's proud of being an outlaw, always has been. I've read newspaper accounts of some of the holdups he was responsible for around Taos and Santa Fe, and he didn't always wear a mask there either. So it's nothing new. Why do you find that interesting, Creel?
Just trying to find out as much about him as I can. Sounds like a proud man. Arrogant, even.
I'd say that's true.
You know anything about the other members of his gang?
Not really. I imagine they're just typical hard cases and gunnies.
But they're good at giving the slip to the law. County sheriff took a posse after them, didn't he?
Yeah, but he didn't have any luck. You head north on the other side of Hell Creek, and it's nothing but badlands all the way to the Verde River. Get in that mess of gullies and buttes, and a man could wander around for days without finding his way out. Probably die of thirst if he was lucky, starve to death if he wasn't. Nobody knows much about it except a few stubborn old desert rats who spent years looking for gold in there without ever finding any.
Sounds like Judson knows his way around the badlands all right. If he's able to hide out and lose posses in there.
I guess that's true enough. Wouldn't surprise me, though, if one of those old prospectors was a member of his gang. Fella could have given up hunting for gold and decided to steal it instead.
North of Hell Creek, you say?
Yeah. Now listen, Creel. If you go poking around up in the Badlands, you'll be putting your life in danger and I can't help you. My jurisdiction runs out at the edge of town.
You give me all the help I wanted, Marshal. Be seeing you.
Bo left the marshal's office and walked back toward the edge of town and the stage line headquarters. He found Scratch sitting in one of the rockers on the front porch and took the other rocker.
Wondered where you'd gotten off to.
I was talking to the marshal.
What about?
Rance Judson.
Find anything out?
There's a $500 reward for him over in New Mexico territory. Add up all the bounties on his head in various places and it probably comes to a pretty good amount.
Uh-huh. We ain't bounty hunters, though.
No, but I was thinking if we collected those rewards, we could buy ourselves enough supplies to last for a good long time and give the rest of it to Mrs. Sutherland to help her keep her business going. And of course, it would be a good thing for the stage line if Judson and his gang were behind bars where they belong.
Or dead. So, we going after the varmint?
Not right away. We got that run to Chino Valley and Cottonwood to make in a couple of days. Plus whatever else Mrs. Sutherland needs us to do. But I figure we'll be around here for a while, so there might be a chance to take a passeur up to the Badlands and have a look around.
You know I like the way you think, old hoss. We ain't had us a good tussle with a bunch of outlaws in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a few months since we came near to getting our dang fool head shot off.
I say whatever you want, pard. At least life don't get bored very often around us.
I could use a little more boredom.
You lie, Bo Creel.
Yeah, I guess I do.
They hadn't seen much of Gil during the day, and nothing of Dave. According to Ponderosa, that was nothing uncommon. At least where Dave not being around was concerned.
Yeah, he'll come dragging in late tonight, drunk as a skunk. And that'll give Gil one more thing to pick at him about.
Supper was fried chicken, and it was just as good as the roast beef the night before. Abigail and Gil seemed to have gotten over their argument that morning, or at least if they hadn't, they didn't mention it. The fact that Dave wasn't there, also not mentioned, hung in the air like the ominous feeling before a thunderstorm.
Ponderosa tells me that you did an excellent job with the harness, Beau. And I know you did fine with the chores I gave you, Scratch.
I was glad to do it, ma'am. Anything else you had that needs doing, you just let me know.
Well, the corral fence isn't in very good shape. Maybe tomorrow both of you could see what you can do with it.
Of course. Be glad to.
Good thing you fellas came along. Place is starting to shape up again.
Gil didn't look too pleased at the praise being heaped on the heads of the Texans, but he didn't say anything. After supper, he took a lantern and went out to the barn for another look at the horses, he said. Beau figured he was actually going out there to sulk. After clearing away the dishes, Beau and Scratch didn't step out onto the porch to smoke as they had the night before. Whoever had taken those shots at them was still out there somewhere, and when somebody wanted to kill you, it made sense not to make the chore any easier for him. Instead, they sat with Ponderosa in the office, the old timer behind the desk on which a lamp burned, and the two Texans on the leather-covered sofa. Beau went over what he had learned from Marshal Harding.
How much do you know about the Badlands, Ponderosa?
Not a blasted thing, except that it's smart to stay out of there. I ain't one of those desert rats the Marshal told you about. Never wasted a single day of my life prospecting for gold. For 99 out of every 100 men who tried, it's a fool's errand. Always had better things to do with my time.
You know anybody else in Red Butte who might be familiar with that part of the country?
You might talk to old Hezekiah. I've heard that he did some prospecting up in that hellhole when he was younger. I don't think he could help you look for Judson's hideout, though. No. He had a bad spill of apoplexy here a while back and can't get around no more. He can still talk, though.
Where can I find him?
His boy runs the general store. Old Hez is there most days sitting by the pickle barrel.
Maybe we'll have a talk with him.
Who's there? The office is closed.
Oh, no. It's Dr. Chambers.
Something wrong, Doc? Nobody's sick here, as far as I know.
Well, I thought I'd check on that wound of yours while I'm here. But that's not the real reason it came.
Dr. Chambers was a small, neatly dressed, middle-aged man with a salt-and-pepper goatee. He looked at Beau and Scratch and went on.
You must be those Texans I've heard so much about.
Yeah, we're from Texas, all right. We sent a little work your way, too.
Yes, I know. Is Gil here, Ponderosa?
Back in the barn, I reckon. You need to see him?
I just thought someone should let him know that Dave is about to get into trouble down at Sharky's. He's trying to pick a fight with some of Jared Rutledge's men.
Oh, hell, don't that boy have any sense at all?
Looked to me like he'd been drinking. I don't know for certain what's going on, no. I just heard a commotion in there as I was passing by to look through the door. Dave was jawing at a couple of Rutledge's men.
Were Dave's friends with him?
Yeah, a tall drink of water called Angus and a fella named Cully, who's about as wide as he is tall.
Yes, I know who you're talking about, but I didn't see either of them. Dave appeared to be by himself.
I'll go tell Gil. I'm afraid I know what he's gonna say, though. He'll say if Dave got himself in a mess, it's his own damn fault, and it's up to him to get himself out of it.
Hold on. Scratch and I will go down there and see what we can do. There's no need to say anything to Gil.
More to Miss Abigail. It just worry her.
You sure?
We're sure.